used to fully catch. I pumped the gas and tried again. More growling and whirring, but the engine wouldn't turn over. I had the windows rolled down and the car belched thick clouds of foul-smelling smoke. Not a good sign. I got out and walked around the car, but nothing looked out of the ordinary. The stupid thing had started fine 20 minutes ago. What was the matter now?
Need a hand?
I swiveled around. Through the darkness, I made out a tall, rangy form wearing Levi's, pointed boots, and a fitted black t-shirt. His dark hair curled around his ears, and he tipped his cowboy hat up, shooting me an easy smile.
Mind if I have a look?
He continued, gesturing at the car. I squeezed the Mustang's keys in my hand. I had no reason to trust him. In hindsight, I should have parked under a streetlight. Not that there was anyone around to see if he decided to drag me into an alley and slit my throat. Nope, I've got it covered, I said, striving for politely disinterested. She usually takes a few tries to start. He rapped his knuckles affectionately against the Mustang's side panel.
Old cars. Either you love 'em or hate 'em.
Got that right. I angled myself behind the steering wheel, hinting that I wasn't in a chatty mood. Thanks for checking on me, neighbor, I added, since it sounded like a small-town thing to say. Probably best to act like a local, so he'd think there'd be someone to miss me if he did drag me into the alley. I tried the engine again. More coughing and sputtering, but no success.
Sure you don't want me to give it a try?
He asked, his tone still friendly, and maybe a touch amused. Just because I'm a girl doesn't mean I can't start my own car, I said, mildly enough, but my words were underscored with annoyance. Please go away, I silently urged him.
Your car? Huh. That's interesting.
What? Because I'm a girl, I can't be into muscle cars, I challenged.
Not what I said.
I cranked the key harder, same low rumble from the engine. It was close to starting, but I couldn't push it over the edge. Carmina was going to kill me. I didn't know how much longer I had until she got back, but it couldn't be long. I let go of a resigned sigh and pinched the bridge of my nose. If I give you the keys, are you going to slit my throat with them and dump my body in the alley?
Wouldn't be smart to tell you if I was.
Instead of laughing, I glared up at him. He grinned, clearly pleased with his joke.
You're not from around here, are you?
What makes you say that? I wondered if he was going to launch into the time-worn cliché of how everyone knows everyone else in a small town. Instead, he said,
Last year, I sold this car to my neighbor.
Suddenly, I had a bad feeling.
Carmina Songster, he recalled. Are you going to tell me why you're driving her car, or should I let you explain yourself to the police?
Crap. I pushed out of the Mustang, standing up to him. He had several inches on me, and up close like this I could see that his eyes were a bright jewel blue, somewhere between turquoise and sea glass. It's not what it looks like.
That's a relief, because it looks like auto theft. What I'm trying to figure out is why you stopped at the library. You're a few blocks short of the interstate. Shouldn't you be hightailing it out of town?
I live with Carmina now. He gave a snort, instantly rejecting the idea.
Carmina hasn't had a visitor in the 19 years I've been her neighbor, and I already know all her family. So fess up. Who are you, really?
She's my foster mom, I said flatly. It was the first time I'd had to use my cover story. If he pressed for more information, I was supposed to tell him how I'd been living in foster homes since my mom died. But I prayed he wouldn't dig deeper. I didn't want to talk about Stella. I was sick of her already. I wanted to go home, to my real home. And while I was at it, I never wanted to see this backwoods wasteland again. He shook his head distrustfully.
Carmina? A foster parent? I don't believe it. How old are you?
18 in August. 3 tiny months until I earned my independence. Might as well have been an eternity.
Why would Carmina take in a 17-year-old girl? He puzzled aloud.
Maybe she's lonely. He snorted again.
That lone wolf? Nah, something isn't adding up. When did you get into town?
Last night.
What's your name?
Stella Gordon. I felt glass in my throat when I said it. I hated the name. It was like I was talking about someone else,
which I guess I was. How long have you been in foster care? He went on, evidently trying to make sense of my story.
Since my mom died?
I'm sorry to hear that. I shrugged. I felt nothing. My mom was alive, but she was as good as dead to me. Where did you come from?
Tennessee, I lied. Knoxville, Tennessee. Ever been there?
Can't say I have.
Neither had I. Guess this meant I could say what I wanted about Knoxville, and neither of us would be any wiser for it. And then he said,
But I would have expected a different accent. Yours sounds East Coast.
Oh, I said dismissively, giving myself an extra second to think up an excuse. That's because my dad grew up in the mid-Atlantic. I took his accent more than my mom's. To my relief, he seemed done grilling me and extended his hand.
Welcome to Thunder Basin, Stella. I'm Chet Falconer.
I frowned. The same Chet Falconer who mows Carmina's lawn? A smile twitched his lips.
She mentioned me?
You woke me up at 5 this morning. See these bags under my eyes? You can take credit.
Your eyes look perfectly fine to me.
Before I could wonder if he'd given me a line, he went on.
Tell you what, I'll make you a deal. I'll get this old battleship running, but I need something in return. There's a diner around the corner with 2 people at a table in the back. One of them is a punk trying to look tough in a leather motorcycle jacket, he added darkly. I want you to grab a table close enough to eavesdrop, order a cheeseburger so you look like you belong, then come out and tell me what they talked about.
I see. You want me to spy on your girlfriend? If you think she's cheating, she is.
He ignored me. I'll have the car running by the time you get back.
No deal. I'm in a hurry. I need it running now.
Well, this is gonna take a few.
I blew out some air. Fine, but you're paying for the cheeseburger. He gave a sigh of exaggerated patience, then slapped a $10 bill in my palm.
Eat slowly. I want to know everything they say.
Even the heartbreaking stuff? The parts where she talks about how awful your breath smells and how your mouth overproduces saliva when you kiss? He pulled his cowboy hat off and whacked me on the butt. Actually whacked me on the butt.
Get going before you miss everything. And I don't have bad breath. Or that other thing.
You'd better have this car working by the time I come out, I warned.
Yeah? Or what?
Or I'm gonna make you buy me a second cheeseburger, and fries, and a shake. I didn't sound ruffled, but if I didn't beat Carmina back, she'd probably make me sit in jail overnight to teach me a lesson. Plus, she'd make sure I never got my hands on the Mustang again. And I couldn't let her do that, because I needed a way to get to the library. I was going to check the email account as often as I could. Reed would email soon, and we could begin to formulate a plan to get back together after my birthday. He was 19 and could legally live on his own. We just had to wait for me to turn 18.
Hold that thought until you've tried the first burger, Chet cautioned with a pirate glint in his eyes.
What's that supposed to mean?
Let's just say the county health department isn't what you'd call fastidious. Fact, jury's still out on whether we have a health department.
I waved his crumpled $10 bill in the air. Then I'll pass on food and consider this my tip for my stellar espionage skills. Turning on my heel, I strolled to the end of the block and looked both ways down the street. The Sundown Diner was on the bottom floor of the next building. I recognized it from that morning's job hunt. The outside lights were on now, moths fluttering madly around the bulbs. A blue and white striped awning extended over the door. I swung through the entrance and made a quick scan of the place. Business was scarce tonight, only 2 tables in use. A mother with 2 small boys was seated in the booth next to the jukebox. At the back of the diner, 2 guys sat hunched across a table, deep in conversation.
Guess I'd been wrong about Chet's girlfriend. He was having me spy on two guys. The one wearing the leather biker jacket looked about my age, maybe a year younger. His brown hair hung in his eyes, which kept shifting nervously around. His companion was several years older, with a beer belly that strained against a Journey concert t-shirt. He sported thick red sideburns and a black head bandana, and he looked like a hybrid between a Hell's Angel and a redneck. I immediately knew I didn't like or trust him.
"Just the one tonight?" the hostess asked me, fishing through her stack of menus. "Do you mind if I sit in the back corner booth?" I flashed a smile. "My lucky seat." "Sure thing, hun."
I settled into the booth. I was close enough that I should have been able to overhear the guys at the next table, but they'd stopped talking when I'd taken my seat. To encourage them to let me fade into the background, I pulled Carmina's Walkman out of my handbag, set it on the table, and inserted the cheap plastic headphones into my ears. "Don't mind me, boys. I'm in my own little world. Now start talking and make it fast. I'm on a tight schedule." The younger of the two was the first to talk. "I've got a few grand coming from my parents," he confessed uneasily.
"Define few."
"Four." The Hell's Angel scratched the scruff on his neck thoughtfully.
"It's not a lot, but it should be enough."
"Once I get you the money, how long until I'm in business?"
2 weeks. Gotta transport the goods from Colorado."
The younger guy nodded, thinking it over. "Okay, I'm in."
"Not so fast. How soon can you get me the cash?"
Just then a waitress ambled over, standing between me and their table.
"Anything to drink?"
"Water," I said, trying to keep one ear trained on the guy's conversation.
"Questions about the menu?"
I hadn't opened the menu. I already knew what I wanted. No matter how hard they tried, they couldn't screw up fries. They were cooked in hot grease. Any lingering bacteria would be killed off.
"A large order of fries, please." "That it?"
I nodded, figuring I deserved to keep the rest of Chet's money, and she sauntered back to the kitchen. One table over, the Hell's Angel and the boy were wrapping things up. The boy was on his cell phone texting, and the Hell's Angel was scrounging through his wallet for cash to pay his tab. I knew Chet wouldn't like it if I returned with next to nothing to report, but he'd have to deal. He'd told me to eavesdrop. I couldn't help it if the conversation only lasted a couple of minutes.
"I'll call you when I have the funds," the boy in the biker jacket said, sliding out of his chair and pocketing his phone.
As he rose to his feet, he must have sensed me watching, because his eyes flicked in my direction. His eyebrows drew together suspiciously at the sight of me, and I immediately picked up my menu, looking absorbed in reading. He left, followed by the Hell's Angel, and I decided rather than wait around for my fries, I'd go see if Chet had upheld his end of our bargain. I paid for the fries at the register and hoped my waitress enjoyed them. In the library parking lot, I found Chet bent under the Mustang's hood. He looked over his shoulder as he heard me approach. Even in the darkness, I could see his hands were smudged with grease.
"Well?"
he asked expectantly. "The kid's parents are giving him $4,000, and he's going into business with the Hell's Angel." Chet swore under his breath.
"What else did they say?"
"Not much. It was a short conversation. The kid hopes to have his business running shortly."
"Over my dead body."
"Just tell me you got the car working."
"Yeah, it was the carburetor. I've got it propped open with a pencil to let air in. See if the engine starts now."
I swung behind the wheel and turned the ignition. Right away, the engine purred to life. I was so relieved I could have kissed Chet. Instead, I said, "What's the fastest way back to Carmina's?" Chet dropped the hood and brushed his hands clean.
"She doesn't know you took the car, does she?"
I bit my lip. "Can this be our little secret?"
"New girl in town already owes me a favor."
He smiled, bringing boyish dimples to his cheeks.
"Take Rodeo Road home. You'll skip a couple lights. Carmina never gets home from Bible study before 9:30. As long as you don't get stopped at the train crossing, you should beat her by 5.
5 minutes wasn't quite the buffer I'd hoped for, but it would have to do. I blew him a kiss and roared out of the lot. At the farmhouse, I was relieved to see Carmina's truck wasn't in the drive.
I backed the Mustang into the barn, just the way I'd found it. Letting myself into the house, I flipped on the light, and nearly swallowed my tongue. Carmina was seated on the sofa, tapping her nails on the armrest. Her features looked chiseled from ice, her mouth compressed thinly, and it made my heart squeeze. "I didn't see your truck," I said nervously.
"Sent it home with Mac Hester after Bible study. He's fixing the transmission. Gave me a lift home."
"Keys," she said, extending her hand. I gave them to her.
"Apology?"
"I'm sorry."
"Not good enough, Stella."
I shifted my weight and exhaled impatiently. "I'm sorry I took your car. It won't happen again."
"Look at me when you speak to me."
"I said I'm sorry," I snapped. "What more do you want?"
"You're coming to church with me tomorrow morning."
I looked her square on. Taking her car was wrong, and I'd apologized. We'd settled the matter, and I wasn't going to let her use my bad behavior as an excuse to exercise authority over me. She wasn't my mom. She was a moving piece in the Justice Department's cover story, and I was going to let her know that I knew it. "I'm not going to church."
"Oh, you're definitely going to church."
"Are you threatening me?"
"You're under my roof, and I expect certain behavior from you. Stealing my car and only feeling bad that you got caught. Those things severely disappoint me."
"Stealing?" I challenged, my defenses automatically shooting up. "I didn't steal your car, I borrowed it."
"Did I leave town? Did I crash it?"
"No. It's in the same condition as when I took it."
"Don't interrupt me and don't talk back to me," she said evenly. "I'm not your mother, Stella. I know that better than anyone. I never had the opportunity of meeting her, but I'd be doing her a great disservice if I let you steal and lie and get away with it."
I pushed down my shock and humiliation and channeled it into rage.
"Don't bring her into this. You don't get to use her to make me feel guilty." "Starting tonight, you have a curfew of 9 p.m.
I made a strangled sound.
"What? You can't give me a curfew. I've never had a curfew."
By the time I was old enough to go out at night, my mom was too high to care what hour I came or went. I took care of myself, set my own rules. Who was this woman that she thought she could tell me what to do?
"Curfew stands.
And
you're joining me at church tomorrow. I can't make you like it. I can't even make you listen. But I'm not going to stand aside and let you run wild this summer. Not on my watch. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm making things worse. But I'd rather try and fail than sit here too damn hesitant to act. I hung a dress in your closet. I don't care if you don't like it. I expect you to be showered, dressed, and in the truck by 9:30. Are we clear?"
I fled upstairs. I slammed the bedroom door, not caring if it was childish. She couldn't make me go to church. I'd call Price. Things were not working out with Carmina. Maybe he could talk to the U.S. Attorney's Office and get them to overrule their decision to place me in a home until my 18th birthday. They thought they knew what was best for me, but I was better off on my own. I'd been on my own for 2 years. Curled up on the bed, I comforted myself with one of Reed's letters. Estella. Day one of summer baseball camp. The facilities are pretty sweet. All-you-can-eat meals in the cafeteria. We sleep in dorms, 2 guys per room, with a shared bathroom down the hall. I have a jackass for a roommate. There are guys on my floor from all over the country, and I get stuck with this loser. There's even one kid who traveled from the Dominican Republic. I guess they're serious about baseball there. During opening ceremonies, the coaches threw out words like legendary, prestigious, and tradition of excellence to describe the training program. It was hard not to laugh. They sound like my dad. He still thinks he can get me to enlist. I'll skip the Winslow family tradition of excellence, thanks anyway. Reed. By the following morning, my temper had cooled slightly. I wasn't in the mood to put on a dress and sit on a hard pew for an hour, but after spending most of the night stewing in a rage, I'd started to see things from a new perspective. Price wasn't going to lift a finger for me if I didn't show him I was trying to make things work with Carmina. Surely he knew me well enough to know I'd never go to church. Which meant, if I did end up going, my willingness would become a powerful bargaining chip. "Look, Price," I'd tell him, "I'm giving this my best shot. I even went to church, but in the end, Carmina and I aren't a good match." Ditto for Nebraska. But right now, I'd fight my battles one at a time. Of course, there was always a chance they'd send me someplace worse. Could things get worse than Thunder Basin? I cast a look full of disdain out my bedroom window and had my answer. I showered and flat-ironed my dark brown hair to sleek perfection. Standing before the mirror, I tousled my bangs. They were getting long, which I sensed was going to be a problem. I was better off trimming them myself, I decided, than letting someone at Haircuts 750 Ode botch them. Shortly before 9:30, I trotted downstairs wearing a mint-green sundress and espadrille sandals that one of the deputies had hastily packed from my home. The shapeless moo-moo dress Carmina had hung in the closet could hardly be called clothing. I was pretty sure the dress was the unspoken half of my punishment for taking the Mustang last night. Church and public humiliation.
"You look respectable," Carmina said somewhat stiffly when I came downstairs.
She carefully avoided my eyes. She hadn't forgotten about last night or forgiven me. We were on equal ground then. What made me even angrier, what was extra painful, was that Carmina, a stranger, was mothering me when my own mother wouldn't. "I don't want the dress you hung in my closet. Please remove it by the end of the day." Without breaking stride, I continued into the kitchen and poured myself a mug of coffee.
"There's a linger longer after church today," Carmina called from the hallway. "If you don't want to stay for it, you'll have to walk back here or catch a ride."
"I don't know what a linger longer is," I returned, burning my tongue on the hot black coffee. I would have preferred a heaping spoonful of sugar and a dash of cream, but I wasn't about to ask Carmina for help finding either. Instead, I sipped as much of the coffee as I could tolerate before I felt my insides start to curl.
"Potluck. Everyone brings a dish and a picnic blanket. Isn't that adorable? A country picnic. I'll pass."
I put my mug in the sink and met her in the hallway. She was wearing a long denim skirt, a white blouse, and those same red cowboy boots. Her platinum hair was smoothed back in a 90s French braid. I tried to come up with a snide remark about her sense of style, but in the end I just rolled my eyes. "Well, it's 9:30 sharp. Let's get this show on the road. Wouldn't dream of being late."
"With attitude to spare," Carmina murmured as she followed me out. Oh, I was just getting started. I couldn't wait to meet her church friends.
If I had anything to say about it, Carmina and her new foster daughter would be the gossip of Sunday dinner tables across town tonight. I fully intended to be the one who left her feeling humiliated. She was an ex-cop. People saw her as an authority figure. Their opinions might shift after today. I was going to walk all over her. Carmina's congregation met in a plain building that mildly resembled a large white barn. Arched windows ran along the sides of the church. A steeple capped the roof. A wide brick staircase led up to the double doors, which were open and letting out a stream of organ music. But what really caught my eye was the marquee sign on the lawn that read, "Exposure to the sun prevents burning." I really hoped this meant the clergy had a sense of humor. We were greeted at the door by a man wearing a crisply ironed black shirt and a clerical collar. His salt-and-pepper hair was parted on the side, and he smiled warmly at us. He was by all accounts so bland it was impossible to be offended.
"Good morning, Carmina," he said, clasping her hand affectionately. "I see you've brought a visitor."
"Pastor Likens, may I present Stella Gordon," Carmina said. "She'll be staying with me for the summer."
Before Pastor Likens could ask a host of follow-up questions, and I could see by the stark surprise in his widening eyes that he wanted to, Carmina propelled me inside by my elbow. "You're not even going to let me say hello to people?" I said as she steered me to a vacant pew. "Tisk, tisk, Carmina, where are your manners?"
"You can open your mouth during the hymns."
She set her green bean casserole for the linger-longer between us.
"Something tells me you've got impressive pipes."
Two silver-haired women shuffled into the pew in front of us, their gazes fluttering speculatively over me and Carmina. Just as one of them tried to catch Carmina's eye, she fixed her attention on removing a ball of lint attached to her skirt, putting true diligence into the task. At that moment, I realized just how uncomfortable Carmina was with having me stay for the summer. I knew my supposed reasons for being in Thunder Basin, but I'd never thought about Carmina's side of the cover story. A reclusive and aging ex-cop fostering a 17-year-old? It was sure to raise a few eyebrows. I wondered why the U.S. Attorney's Office had picked her. Her background in law enforcement had undoubtedly made her a desirable candidate. Probably she was getting paid a boatload for taking me in. I wasn't an average foster. I was in Witsec. The higher the danger, the steeper the pay. It was happening all over again. I was being used for money. The only reason my mom had fought for custody was so she could get child support from my dad, which she proceeded to use on drugs. And now, Carmina was using me to pad her retirement. Then again, Carmina didn't seem that interested in money. Everything she owned was on the fast track to the junkyard. I got the feeling she hated shopping more than putting up with me. Whatever her motivations, I strongly sensed Carmina's game plan was to power through the summer by keeping her head down, dodging invasive inquiries, and praying the time passed quickly. I wondered what it felt like for her to lie to her friends and neighbors. After all, long after I was gone, she'd still have to live with these people, knowing she'd kept secrets and never been fully honest with them. I almost felt sorry for her. But I wasn't ready to let her off the hook just yet. Not after she'd forced me to come to church. I should have been sleeping in. That's what the weekend was for. "Why did you take me in?" I asked her, my tone a little bit demanding, a little bit suspicious.
"Pardon?
What's in it for you? What do you get from all this? What made you take in a 17-year-old girl you don't owe a thing to?"
"Now that's one question I can't get off my mind."
Carmina and I turned in our seats as Chet Falconer sprawled comfortably in the pew behind us. He'd cleaned up for church, putting on chinos and a lightweight navy polo. He'd ditched the cowboy hat and grass-stained boots, and it had completely transformed his appearance.
I'd say one thing for Chet. He knew how to put a little flutter in my stomach.
His blue eyes glittered, and he raked his damp curly hair behind his ears. He smelled like soap and sun-dried laundry, and it was an irresistible combination.
"Good morning, Chet," Carmina said rigidly, then turned to face forward. "Conversation over."
I couldn't tell if Chet had done something to offend her, now or in the past, or if she was always this ornery. Given that she'd bought his Mustang as recently as last year, and that he mowed her lawn, I was leaning toward the latter.
"Aw, Gran, you know I'm not going to give up that easily," Chet went on, leaning close to speak in her ear. "If you wanted help around the house, I could have loaned you Dusty. Kid's an angel. Wouldn't give you a single gray hair."
Carmina made a harumph sound.
"You're one to talk. You were just as much trouble at 16. Wasn't that about the time I first arrested you?"
"This conversation is finally getting interesting," I said, arching my eyebrows inquiringly at Chet.
"Out of luck, soldier," he informed me. "Carmina keeps all my secrets. She knows I'd stop mowing her lawn if she let my skeletons out."
"I made no such agreement," Carmina scoffed.
"Your hair looks different," Chet told me. "All dressed up, I almost didn't recognize you. Now, who is that pretty girl?" I asked myself when I came in.
I stuck my tongue out. "Speak for yourself. Are the pigs looking after your boots and hat?"
Chet grinned.
I bet this one's a real peach around the house, Carmina.
She gave another harumph. Then her brow furrowed and she fixed me with a probing gaze. Am I to understand the two of you have met?
When? She demanded.
Last night, I said. Chet helped me start the Mustang at the library. I couldn't get it running. He's very good with cars, I added, twirling my necklace around my finger guilelessly. The smile on Chet's face slipped. His face clouded with confusion before blanching with a certain sickened dread. She knows? He mouthed at me. She does now, I said sweetly. Slowly, Carmina turned in the pew, giving Chet a dark, berating look.
You knew she stole my car last night, Chet Falconer? You helped her get away with it?
Yes, ma'am.
Anything to say for yourself?
Carburetor was acting up again.
I ought to have you both arrested.
Just then, the organist finished the final chord of the prelude music, and Pastor Likens took his place at the pulpit. The congregation quieted, and all eyes turned to the front of the meeting house. Carmina gave Chet a long, cool stare. Then she took the hymnal out of the seat pocket behind her and whacked it hard against his leg. I bit my lip to stifle a giggle, just as Chet's breath tickled my ear.
Think that's funny, do you? My turn next.
I must have been in a really good mood, because after church I let Chet talk me into staying for the linger longer. On the church's back lawn, he added two bags of potato chips to the spreads of salads, casseroles, and desserts on folding tables. He hadn't brought a picnic blanket, so after separating ourselves from the congregation, we made do with the grass in the shade of a leafy oak. Chet lay on his back, his arms folded under his head.
I'm gonna get you back, you know.
I kicked off my espadrilles and sank languidly against the tree trunk. Someone wasn't listening to Pastor Likens' sermon on forgiveness.
You always this self-righteous?
I lifted an eyebrow.
Yeah, so?
He rolled on his elbow, facing me. He dropped his voice to a secretive hush.
I remember what Pastor Likens said about casting the devil behind us. Go on, girl. Get where you belong.
I kicked him in the leg. Before church, you and Carmina mentioned someone named Dusty, I said. Who is he?
My kid brother.
Chet's countenance darkened and the banter went out of him.
I'd formally introduce you, but I didn't get the pleasure of dragging his butt to church this morning. He never came home last night.
Little brother? When Carmina said Chet was man of the house, I'd envisioned him living alone. Aren't you only 19?
Only? You're not that far behind.
What I mean is it even legal for the two of you to live together? I knew Chet's parents were dead, but I hadn't realized he'd taken on more than just ownership of the house. He was also his little brother's guardian. How old is he?
16. Old enough to drive, not that he waited until he got his license to start. My parents used to try to slow him down by hiding the car keys, but necessity is the mother of invention, and he taught himself how to hotwire cars at 13. Park your car on the street at night, and he's likely to borrow it. He'll bring it back by morning. A little lighter on gas.
Chet made a sound of disgust.
When he finally does drag his butt home from whatever party he crashed, I swear I'm gonna lock him in the crawl space for a week.
Crawl space?
Surprised you didn't have them in Tennessee, no? A crawl space is an underground tornado shelter. Just what it sounds like. A tunnel under the house with enough room to crawl inside on your hands and knees. Carmina has a newer shelter in her backyard, with two doors opening to a staircase that leads to an underground bunker. About 10 by 10 in size. Lock on the door. Some neighborhood kids and I used to use it as a clubhouse. Had a no girls allowed sign and everything.
As a matter of fact, I had seen a set of low-lying doors mounted at an angle not far from her back porch. I'd just assumed the doors led to a storage cellar.
Chet said, You'll get your chance to go inside one. It would be rare for a summer to pass without a tornado touching down in the area.
I shuddered. I sincerely hoped he was wrong about that. I'd weathered a few ice storms back home and gone without power for a couple of days, and that was where my tolerance for bad weather ended.
"Where are these parties your brother goes to?" I asked. My motive for asking was a little selfish. After spending 3 days in a government safe house, followed by 3 more under Carmina's watch, I was desperate for a nightlife. Thunder Basin definitely wasn't Philly, and I wasn't expecting trendy clubs. But at this point, I'd take anything. If Chet could point me in the direction of a party, I'd jump at the opportunity. I didn't want to spend every weekend this summer holed up at Carmina's house. I was dying for a social life.
The guy he was with last night is Cooter Sagary, so they probably found an empty boxcar on railroad property and drank until they passed out. Or maybe that's wishful thinking. With Cooter, who knows? That's the problem. He's a loose cannon, and now Dusty's mixed up with him. I've done my share of stupid things, and sure, I spent a night or two in jail, but I never did anything that was going to potentially land me in prison.
Cooter Sagary? Please tell me that's a nickname.
Given name, and it fits him, Chet grunted. A lowlife and a redneck, as you probably noticed last night.
I frowned, tilting my head. Hang on, the kid at the Sundown Diner last night? That was Dusty? And the man with him was Cooter?
Chet's face revealed he'd thought I'd already figured this out.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. Long night. If I'd stepped foot inside the diner, Dusty would have bolted, and I wouldn't have known what he's up to. Having you there came in handy.
You used me to spy on your brother.
And I'd do it again.
Okay, but it's low and sneaky. And annoying. Give Dusty some room. He probably feels suffocated by you, and everything he's doing, all the bad stuff, is just to test you.
I realized, with a start, that I was speaking from the heart. Rebellion had been my favorite tactic to push my mom's buttons. Skipping out on chores, siding with my dad on stupid issues, using foul language. I was a young lady, a descendant of genteel southern folk, and was supposed to be courteous and mannered. It had worked. And then, of course, she'd started using drugs, and getting her attention was a worthless pursuit.
Cooter Sagary deals drugs, Chet announced bluntly. Dusty doesn't know what he's getting into. Even if he is trying to test me, this isn't the way to do it. Best case, he gets a record. Worst case, he winds up in prison.
Truth be told, I'd suspected drugs. The $4,000 startup fee had been a bit of a giveaway. Dusty was going to try his hand at dealing. Can you tell Carmina? I suggested. Maybe she can talk to Dusty, paint a realistic picture of what's in store for him.
He'll know I'm behind it. It'll just drive him to do it. I'm gonna have to come up with another way to talk sense into him.
Does he do drugs?
Haven't caught him, but I'm not going to kid myself. My parents' death wasn't easy on him. He'd drop out of school if I didn't keep dragging him through the doors. Last month, he got fired from the Sun Mart. What kind of person can't keep a job bagging groceries?
He's doing something, I'm sure of it, Chet said with an upset shake of his head.
I wanted to tell Chet I knew how he felt. Living with someone who was using sucked. All the sneakiness and deception and the never-ending string of excuses. How many times had I wanted to shake my mom and yell, "Stop acting like I'm stupid enough to believe your lies!" But my mom's drug addiction wasn't part of my cover story. I was supposed to tell everyone in Thunder Basin she was dead. That way, if she cleaned up and got out of rehab, we could relocate to a new town and start our lives over, this time together. It was the Department of Justice's goal for my future, and it was never going to happen. First, I wasn't holding my breath for my mom to achieve any measure of success in rehab. Second, I was never, ever living with that woman again. Now that I'd had a taste of life without her, they'd have to drag me back kicking and screaming. I frowned, absorbing this declaration slowly. I still viewed Thunder Basin as a prison, and would for the next 3 months. But it stood to reason every prison had fleeting moments of freedom. A glimpse of blue sky, a singing bird on the windowsill, or, in my case, not having the weight of caring for my mom dragging me under. What if Thunder Basin was my chance to come up for air? Chet was waiting for my response. Even though I could tell he needed someone to talk to, Dusty's reckless behavior hit unnervingly close to home, and I needed to bow out of the conversation. It was wrong, but realistic. For my safety, I had to stick to my cover story.
"Who knew this parenting gig could be so tough?" he said at last, kneading between his eyes.
"Yeah, good luck with that," I said, lamely, hating the pang of guilt that followed. What Chet needed now was a friend and a sympathetic ear, not platitudes.
"Time to go, Stella."
I hadn't seen Carmina approach. She stood over us, fanning away the growing heat with the church bulletin. "Actually, I'll catch a ride with Chet," I said, glancing at him to make sure it was okay.
"I think it's best if you come with me."
Carmina's tone was level, but as unbending as steel. Chet nudged me with his knee.
"I've got errands to run in town anyway, but I'll catch you later."
I felt heat creep up my neck. Chet didn't have errands. He was letting Carmina win, and it made me furious. Was I the only one with enough backbone to stand up to her? "Then I'll run errands with you," I said, rising to my feet as he did.
"Not today," Carmina said. "Get in the truck, Stella. Go on, Chet. Don't let us keep you."
Chet nodded politely at each of us, then headed toward the parking lot. He glanced back once, but I couldn't read his expression. Disappointed? Apologetic? I folded my arms stiffly over my chest and glared at Carmina. "You've really got the whole intimidation thing down, don't you?"
"I told you to stay away from that boy."
I gave a harsh laugh. "Because he's trouble? Open your eyes. Chet Falconer is as harmless as they come. Look at him." I gestured angrily at the parking lot where he'd retreated. "He was polite enough to let you chase him off rather than cause a scene. Trust me, I know trouble, and Chet isn't it. Even if he was, you don't get to tell me who I can hang out with. You're not my parent. You're a stand-in, a placeholder, a name on a government document as far as I'm concerned." Carmina's lips had thinned to a tight wire.
"Get in the truck."
"No."
"Don't make me repeat myself, Stella."
"Nobody's making you do anything. You're the one bossing me around. I bet it kills you to have someone stand up to you. You used to be a big, bad cop, and the town respects you for it." "Well, you don't scare me. I'll walk back to the farm, but I'm not getting in your truck." I started to turn on my heel when Pastor Likens crossed the lawn to us, waving his arms, signaling us to wait.
"Carmina, I didn't get a chance to thank you and Stella for coming to this morning's sermon."
Short of breath, he shook our hands again, smiling broadly.
"I hope I gave you each something to reflect on this week."
Carmina smiled tightly. "You always do. Now, if you'll excuse us."
"I hope to see you next week, Stella."
I didn't have much time to think up a response. Acting almost instinctively, I seized the moment and dropped my eyes, sighing forlornly. "I hope so. Of course, it's up to Carmina. I don't have a car or a bike, so she decides when I get to leave the house." Pastor Likens' smile faltered.
"Oh, well, I'm sure Carmina would want you to hear the Lord's word. Isn't that right?"
Carmina rolled her eyes and exhaled a long-suffering sigh.
"Stella is always welcome to attend church."
"Thank you, Carmina," I said, doing my best to appear sincerely grateful. Pastor Likens continued to glance between us uncertainly. At last, his face brightened.
"Stella, do you play softball?"
I didn't know where he was going with this, but I had a good feeling. "It's been a couple of years, but I know the game." His eyes lit up further.
"Have you heard of our teen co-ed softball league? Games are Friday after sundown. I saw you talking with Chet Falconer earlier. He's in charge of the league. Why don't I see if he can squeeze you onto one of the smaller teams? I was new in town once, too, and while it takes some time to feel like you fit in, the best thing you can do is dive in and make new friends. Carmina, surely you can do without Stella for a few hours a week.
I turned to face her. Please, Carmina? My tone was hopeful, begging even, but my eyes blazed with smug triumph. Carmina pinned me with a stern glare.
I'm sure that will be fine. Stella is allowed to come and go as she pleases within reason. The child makes it sound like I'm a parole officer.
When she caught us staring at her, she added adamantly,
I'm not.
Pastor Likens patted Carmina gently on the shoulder.
I'm sure it's been an adjustment, balancing your previous line of work with this new, exciting endeavor of raising a girl. Two completely different situations that require different, approaches.
Carmina just stared at him blankly. Pastor Likens cleared his throat, then shook my hand.
Good luck, Stella, he said with heartfelt concern.
I waited until he walked away to smile contentedly.
My work here was done.
Monday morning, I got a call from the Sundown Diner. The owner, Dixie Joe, wanted to interview me for a car hop position. The term car hop made me think of girls on roller skates and the movie American Graffiti. I hadn't put on skates since I was 6 or 7, and had distant memories of doing the limbo on wheels and a sore tailbone. If she made me skate as part of the interview, I didn't stand a chance. It was too hot for jeans, so I threw on cotton shorts and an eyelet top. Not fancy enough to earn me a look of approval from Carmina as I jogged down the porch steps on my way out, but I was going for comfort. Carmina had loaned me her bike, a lime green beach cruiser with balloon tires. A wicker basket was strung up between the handlebars. Like everything Carmina owned, the paint was dinged and chipped and the surface was coated in dust. But if the bike got me out of the house, it was as good as a Porsche in my eyes. As I pedaled into town, the rush of hot air flung my hair off my shoulders. Instead of feeling oppressive, the heat felt energizing. I was overcome by the urge to release the handlebars and tip my face toward the sun. Cautiously, I tested the feel of the wind zipping through my fingers. I felt open to infinite possibility. This road, this morning, this summer belonged to me. No one else to worry about. My mom wasn't here. She wasn't my problem anymore. Imagining that every pedal stroke took me farther from her, I pumped my legs harder. A smile warmed in my throat, finally breaking on my face. I was free. At 10, an hour before the sundown opened, I propped the beach cruiser against a streetlight and rapped on the front door. My knock was answered by a willowy middle-aged blonde. Smile lines fanned from her eyes, and her hair had been combed into a loose braid. Short, messy strands sprang up from her scalp like rays of sun. She had warm brown eyes and an open, honest face.
You must be Stella.
You know, I have a sweet spot for that name. One of my best girlfriends in grade school was a Stella. She had deep hazel eyes, just like you. I shifted uncomfortably. It felt wrong to strike up a conversation around a name I hated and that wasn't mine to begin with. If I took that route, I'd inevitably have to make up more lies. It was my grandmother's name, or my parents named me after Stella McCartney. It didn't feel right to lie to a woman with such a sincere face. And the more lies I told, the harder it would be to keep everything straight in my head. So I settled on, "You must be Dixie Joe. Thanks for the interview."
"Have you worked in food service before?" she asked, leading me across the dining area and through a pair of swinging double doors.
The white-tiled kitchen gleamed and smelled as clean as a bar of soap. I counted one woman chopping heads of lettuce, another slicing and battering onions, and a guy my age unloading an oversized steam-spewing dishwasher. The air was already hot, their faces flushed. Dixie Joe signaled for me to take a seat in a small office off the kitchen.
I haven't. I sat in the chair across the desk from her, deciding now wasn't the time to tell her I'd never had a job. But I'm a fast learner, and I'm a people person.
And I love AC.
Can you work nights? All but Friday. I still hadn't heard from Chet about the softball league, but I hoped it would work out. For one thing, I needed something to do on the weekends. For another, I could see myself hanging out with Chet for the summer. Annoying cowboy attributes aside, he had a good sense of humor and wasn't as backwoods as some of the people I'd seen in town. And, if I was being completely honest, he wasn't the worst to look at, either. How many hours are you hoping for? As many as you'll give me. I'm looking to hire someone part-time, 20 hours a week. You'd be responsible for some food prep, like milkshakes and adding the right dressing to our stock salads. But the primary duties of a car hop are taking orders from curbside customers, sending the orders to the cooks, and taking the food out when it's ready. I can handle that. The nice thing about sitting smack dab on the street corner is that we've got the parking spaces all down the left side of the building. Customers pull in, and they don't have to leave their car to get food. We serve anywhere from 20 to 50 cars a night. She smiled slyly. They don't take up tables in the dining area, and there's no cleanup. Best of both worlds. Can you start tonight, Stella? I blinked. Are you offering me the job? If you want it. It was an easy decision. Time away from Carmina, AC, and a little spending money? I smiled brightly. You've got yourself a new car hop. Dixie Joe rose from behind the desk. Be here tonight at 4:30. It'll give you a chance to get the swing of things before the crowds arrive. I pay every other Friday. Still on board? Definitely. Then we'll see you tonight, Stella. With a smile, she signaled me to see myself out. I was halfway across the kitchen when I backtracked and poked my head through her door. One more thing. Is there a uniform? She snapped her fingers. Almost forgot. The new ones just came in. The old ones were pink and white striped dresses with a lace hem. Reminded me of something Dolly Parton would have worn on tour in 1981. If you swing by the Salvation Army, they're selling them for 10 apiece. She rifled through one of the boxes stacked along the back wall and held up a faux leather black skirt and fitted camo top. Better? She arched her brows, asking my opinion. I laughed. You have to ask? Top has to be tucked in for safety purposes, but you can wear whatever closed-toe footwear you choose. What size would you like? I took a medium and walked out with a bounce in my step. As far as job interviews went, I was 1-0. Outside, Carmina's beach cruiser was gone. I glanced both ways down the street. A few cars rolled along the brick streets of Thunder Basin's downtown, but the sidewalks were empty. No guilty-looking pedestrians making a break for it with an eyesore of a bike. So much for small-town safety. I still didn't have a cell phone, so I couldn't report the bike stolen. Nor could I call Carmina to pick me up. She'd be furious and would probably force me to walk as punishment. Any way I looked at it, I was going on foot. I'd give her the good news first, that I was Thunder Basin's newest car hop, and hope it was enough to soothe over the loss of her bike. But it still didn't answer how I was going to get to work tonight. Pinning my hair up, I crossed to the shady side of the street and started the long walk back. I'd only made it a few blocks when a banana-yellow vehicle rumbled up beside me. The passenger window was rolled down, and Chet Falconer grinned through it, tipping his tan Stetson at me.
Hot morning, he observed.
What do you want? I said, feigning annoyance, but the truth was I couldn't believe my luck. Maybe Chet was finished in town and I could bum a ride back to Carmina's.
Did you walk to town? Quite a hike.
Not all of us are lazy. Some of us like a little exercise and fresh air. What is this gas guzzler anyway? I asked, gesturing at his vehicle. I'd never seen anything like it. It looked like the love child of a Jeep and a military truck.
1977 International Harvester Scout. They don't make them anymore.
Hazarding a guess, 15 miles per gallon? You could give the environment a break and at least carpool. Find some lonely traveler who could use a ride.
His grin widened.
You angling for a lift?
Just worried about the state of the world we're leaving for our grandchildren. For emphasis, I eyed his scout doubtfully.
Get in already.
I glanced farther down the sidewalk, bit my lip, and tried to look conflicted. But it's such a nice day.
Chet snorted. It's 90 degrees out. Get in before I change my mind.
I tugged on the door and hauled myself inside. Fine, you talked me into it. The inside of Chet's scout smelled like an earthy mixture of leather polish, old books, and grass clippings. No artificial air freshener dangled from the rearview mirror, and I hadn't caught a whiff of cologne. I hadn't expected to. Chet wasn't as fastidious about his looks as the boys I knew back home. He definitely wasn't as meticulous as Reed, who ironed his jeans. When Reed came to pick me up, his stiff hair held the telltale sign of maximum hold gel. His clothes were fresh from the cleaners, and he smelled as fragrant as a department store. He probably spent at least an hour getting ready.